Chapter 15. Sol System.
We can't have surprised them, Kondos said.
Of course not. Narcissus wasn't sitting in the bridge's command throne. He paced back and forth before the primary oculus. The Orc moon was filling more and more of the sky as the armada drew closer. Its details resolved into mountain ranges and canyons of metal. There was no organization that Narcissus could see. It was stone and iron come together as if brute force had a geology. It waited in the void for the human ships, silent and dark. There was no response. It was as still as it had been since the moment of its arrival. Narcissus entertained the crazy hope that the orcs had somehow destroyed themselves in their journey, then dismissed it.
Why aren't they attacking?
Kondos muttered. She stood midway between the throne and the helm, leaning against the cargo monitoring station as if she were contemplating leaping forward ahead of the bow. The oculus's field of vision was crowded with ships. Narcissus had the impression of an endless rain of metal directed at the orcs. Aft of the militant fire, there was an even larger portion of the fleet. He had ordered Rallis to take the ship to the leading quarter of the armada. He wanted to see what happened from the start. So he told himself, hoping to get it all over with right away. So he asked himself. No, he answered. We're going to fight to live and to win. The fire was following the great bulk of the mass conveyor, Expanse of Destiny. The huge ship, carrying 100,000 troops and volunteers, was just slightly to port. It seemed large and solid as a planet. It would be the fire's shield. Narcissus felt no shame in his tactic. His duty was to reach the Star Fortress. He wasn't guard, and he wasn't navy. He would leave the debates about honor to them. So far, though, his ship hadn't needed the shield. The armada had covered over half the distance to the Orc moon. There was no response. And then there was. Time split, broken in half by a single moment. On the lost side, there was the calm in the void and the grand illusion of the proletarian crusade in its purest, most realized form. On the other side, in the present that now unfolded with merciless revelation, was reality. And at last, the orcs took action. At last, Narcissus realized that some part of him did respond as if something long anticipated was finally coming to pass. The knowledge made him ill. What have they done to us, he wondered. Gaps opened on the surface of a planetoid, a sudden spread of disease. They lit up with the fire of an endless stream of launches. The orcs reached out for the armada.
Take us behind the Expanse of Destiny, Narcissus told Rallis.
The helmsman was already changing course, putting the moon into eclipse.
Those aren't rockets, Kondos said.
The orcs were sending squadron upon squadron of fighters. Some flew straight at the fleet, others swung wide. They attacked the merchant's armada from every direction like a grasping talon. From the other side of the moon came two large orc cruisers. They followed the fighters more slowly, and though they were dwarfed by the moon, their aggressive, brutal lines, their massive armor, and their arrays of guns made their approach terrible. Narcissus became acutely aware of the lack of any fighting ship in the armada. How had he ever believed even a single ship would get through? Evasion wasn't going to help. It was also the only defense he had.
Get us in tight, he said.
The conveyor's engines,
Rallis said.
Yes, I know. As close as you can to their wash.
They would hide in the nova glare of the expanse's propulsion.
And if the orcs target the engines?
Kondos asked.
We run!
The orc fighters fell on the fleet. The space between the Terran ships was filled with a swarm of aggression. Multiple squadrons surrounded the bigger ships. They gathered around the Expanse of Destiny like flies to carrion. The coherence of the fleet unraveled as the Terran ships responded to the attack. The movements looked more like a dance than combat. The armada had no guns, and the orcs did not fire.
Why aren't they shooting? Narcissus wondered.
They're going to board, said Kondos.
She was right. The orc fighters were larger than single-pilot ships. Narcissus had thought their bulging hulls contained bombs or torpedoes. Now he wished they did. The swarming craft around the conveyor attached themselves to its flanks. The glare from the engines hid what happened next from him.
Can you get us any closer?
he asked Rallis.
Risky, sir.
So is being cut open by the greenskins.
Warning runes began lighting across the bridge's control surfaces. A proximity toxin sounded. Rallis shut it off. The conveyor's engine flare grew brighter. The battle lost distinction. Its events became more distant. The starboard-facing oculus flashed as three orc ships opened fire on a small yacht. The ship could only carry 5 passengers, but even its owner had stepped forward to play a part in the great adventure. It was the first ship to die, its cargo the first casualties. It was too small, Narcissus thought. It wasn't worth boarding, so the orcs cleared it out of the way.
If we're boarded,
Rallis began. He hesitated.
What are you asking?
Narcissus could guess.
We're faster than the conveyor. I can take us all the way in. It will be quick.
No, said Kondos. We fight.
Until they take the bridge, Narcissus said.
He was already choosing his preferred defeat. The hull of the Expanse of Destiny was shaking. Colonel Erich Lancer knew the sound. Breach points. He looked at his command, multiple squads of his granite myrmidons surrounded by a sea of volunteers. The civilians were holding weapons, at least there was that, but they were also terrified. The crusade of their imaginations had not encompassed the possibility of fighting orcs before reaching the moon.
Rifles forward!
He stood on a raised level at the rear of the cargo bay, where he could be heard and seen. The vibration of the hull grew worse, but he couldn't tell where the break would come.
There are thousands of us. Nothing can get in without being shot.
He wasn't lying. What he didn't say was how little that might matter. Sergeants Bessler and Parton, closest to his position, gave him significant grins. They knew. The irony was, the regiment's last action had been against the greenskins. It had been just another suppression exercise on the eastern fringe, and it was the myrmidons who had been boarding the orcs, taking apart a ramshackle raiding fleet. The fight had been one-sided, just like this one. There was no strategy possible. There had been no time to train the civilians in much beyond how to pull a trigger. So be it. The principle, after all, was to overwhelm the orcs with numbers. They could do that here, too. How many troops could the orcs send in at one time? The sound of the attack became a monstrous grinding. The orc ships were using something with a blade to cut through the expanse of Destiny's shell. The noise filled the cargo bay. Lancer felt the blood drain from his face. He wasn't just hearing the vibration of attacks all along the hull. Many of them were on this section alone. Too close together for even the most reckless boarding parties, they couldn't know if there were bulkheads sealing off one breach from another. But if they didn't care... The orcs weren't breaching this section of the hull. They were removing it. Lancer whirled. He ran to the rear wall, to the central interior bay door. He slammed his palm against its controls. The door groaned upwards.
Out! Lancer shouted. No!
The grinding scream of tearing metal drowned him out. Bessler and Parton saw him, though, and pushed the troops and volunteers near them towards the exit. Movement in the right direction began, sluggish, far too slow, then picking up speed as more people saw him gesture and saw the beginnings of flight. The terror-stricken noise of the assault spurred them on. The corridor on the other side of the door was wide, large enough for the servitor-operated loaders to travel to and from the bays. The crowd ran past Lancer in a steady stream, the bottleneck minimal. Too little, he knew. Much, much too late. Hundreds had reached the corridor. There were thousands still in the hold. The civilians were panicking now. Nearest the outer hull, Lancer could see myrmidons still holding position, still training their guns in the enemy's direction. The gestures were symbolic. There would be nothing to shoot. There would be no evacuation for them either. There wasn't time. So they stood their ground, choosing honor over pointless flight. Some looked back at Lancer over the vast space of the hold. He saluted them. A monstrous serpent hissed. Lancer hit the controls again and threw himself into the crush out of the bay. A great wind began to blow in from the corridor. The grind reached a peak of agony. Then there was a pop that was larger than sound. Almost half the bay's wall vanished. Slabs of the ship's hull spun away. The atmosphere blasted out into the void. It scooped up the crusaders in the hold and scattered them into the great and cold nothing. 2 orc fighters hung in the opening. articulated arms extended from their noses, wielding circular saws 4 meters in diameter. They were spinning, but the grind was gone. There was only the blank roar of the wind. The force of the venting pulled at Lancer like chains. Blood burst from his nose and ears. The door was halfway down. He pushed against the hurricane of decompression. He gripped the side of the doorway and lunged forward, shoving against the struggling backs. The man in front of him fell. He banged into Lancer as the wind took him back. Lancer clutched the doorway harder. The yank tried to dislocate his arm. The door was less than 2 meters from being closed. The roar became a desperate whistling shriek. Lancer ducked low and hauled himself around the corner into the corridor. He slammed the top of his head against the descending barrier and collapsed against the wall. The door closed, trapping a handful of crusaders beneath it. The wind's shriek continued a few seconds longer as flesh and bone held back heavy steel for a moment more. Then the pressure of the mechanism and the weight of the door won, severing and crushing. The wind died. Lungs rasping, Lancer stood. He moved forwards to take the lead of the column of crusaders who had managed to reach the corridor. He pushed past perhaps 300 civilians before he reached Bessler and Parton's squads. They were the only Myrmidons who had made it.
"Doesn't make sense,"
Parton said. She wiped a smear of blood from her upper lip.
"Why go to the trouble of peeling the ship open? Why not just torpedo it if they're not going to board?"
"Because it amuses them," Bessler suggested.
Lancer shook his head.
"I've never known greenskins to entertain themselves by taking a slower approach to violence."
He shouted for silence. The sobs of the civilians quieted enough for him to hear what he had feared. More of the vibrating grind coming from elsewhere in the ship.
"They are boarding," he said. "That was a decapitation move. They took out most of the opposition we could muster at a stroke."
"Which means they knew what they were doing,"
Parton said, awed.
"I'm not interested in what they planned," said Lancer, before Parton could continue.
The implications of orcs taking the time to attack a ship based on its layout and probable complement of defenders did not need airing. That talk would not help with what needed to be done, and would change nothing. So what do we do? He thought of the expanse of Destiny's other cargo bays holding tens of thousands more crusaders. The orcs had likely vented them, too.
"We stick to the interior passageways," he said. "Make for the bridge. If they are boarding, that's where we'll have to hold them."
He looked back at the civilians. Many still looked determined. All were terrified. The dream of the crusade had soured.
"You wanted to fight the greenskins?"
Lancer shouted to them.
"You're lucky. You're getting the chance early. Let's go. Tear them apart."
He led the charge aft, towards the ship's superstructure. Parton and Bessler's troops shouted defiance, spreading the will to fight. And in the tighter confines of the corridors, 300 souls became a crowd, a force, a surging wall of anger looking for an enemy to kill. Deeper in the ship, the vibrations of the breaching faded. It became possible to pretend that nothing was happening. Lancer sensed the confidence of the crusaders build still more. 2/3 of the way to the bridge, they found the enemy. About 20 orcs burst out of a side passage linking to one of the smaller cargo holds. Lancer had no chance to give orders. He and the Myrmidons dropped into crouches and started firing at the intersection ahead. The first ranks of the civilians fired, too. There was no discipline to the volleys of Laz, but there was no way to miss either. Orcs went down. The humans cheered, triumph and rage, loud enough to shake the walls of the passageway. The orcs didn't return fire. They barreled down the hall towards the crusaders. A few more fell. Then Lancer drew his sword and ran forward. He couldn't let the orcs steal the momentum. The crusaders charged with him. The two forces collided. The humans had the numbers, the orcs had the physical strength. The battle became a melee, a riot of blades and blood. The crusaders' arsenal was basic, las guns and bayonets. Few had any armor. The orcs all carried guns, but waded in with their own blades. Lancer had fought the greenskins before. He was used to seeing their huge machetes and axes, but he had never felt his own weapons outclassed by the brute's armament. The weapons these orcs wielded, and the forms of armor they wore, were as massive as ever, but it seemed that their exuberant brutality was the product of skill rather than crude overcompensation. Imperial blades dulled and bent against orcish plate. Imperial bodies came apart beneath orcish blows. The floor was awash with blood. Lancer could barely move, caught in the crush of struggling human and greenskin bodies. The density of the struggle helped. The orcs were crowded in as much as he was, and denied the leverage to use their greater strength to its full effect. He slipped his sword beneath the helmet of one breast. He drove the point up through the orc's chin and into its brain. The press of bodies held the corpse upright long enough for him to withdraw the blade. A taller orc made a noise that was snarl and laugh. It swung its cleaver at him. He couldn't duck. He tilted his head to the side. It was enough. The blade sank into the side of the skull of the man behind him, chopping through at eye level. Lancer raised his las pistol and shot the orc in the center of the forehead. The beast blinked, its skin smoldering with lasburn. It pulled its arm back to strike again, knocking its smaller kin aside with the force of the gesture. Lancer fired again, 5 more times. He had to sear the orc's face to slag before the monster finally dropped. Lancer took half a step forward, walking on bodies. A huge fist struck him in the temple. Stunned, vision bleary, he lunged forward, sword extended. Luck, or the Emperor's hand, guided his blow. The impact of the blade sinking through greenskin muscle to the heart almost dislocated his arm. The orcs kept coming. There was no forcing them back. They advanced, a battering ram of flesh that hit like stone and broke the human wall down. Step by step, the Crusaders were forced back down the hall, but they fought and they stabbed with last chance desperation. They died by the dozens. The orcs died one by one. The numbers won. Drenched in gore, Lancer leaned against the wall. He gasped for breath. His right side ached from a power claw hit. If the orc had been able to do more than glance him, he would have been crushed. As it was, he could feel the movement of broken ribs. He wondered how long it would be before a floating bone punctured a lung. He pushed away thoughts of a Medicaid bay. He didn't have the luxury of that hope. He would be lucky to live long enough to die from this wound. The corridor had become a slaughterhouse. The corpses of orcs and humans lay in a mire of blood. Most of the orc bodies were still intact. Many of the humans were scattered remains. The stench was thick. Lancer felt like he was breathing blood and offal. Parten was as blood-soaked as he was, but none of her wounds were life-threatening. Bessler's left arm had been crushed to jelly below the elbow. One of his troopers was applying a tourniquet to his stump. He was pale, barely keeping unconsciousness at bay. Both squads had been decimated. 2/3 of the civilians had been killed, but they had won. The survivors' eyes were wide with the dulled drunkenness of their victory. Lancer pushed himself away from the wall.
"Keep going!"
he called out, voice rasping. If they stopped to rest, they would lose the momentum of this hard triumph. Despair was one bad thought away. He started to walk, stumbled. He stopped, aware of the eyes on him, straightened, and when he was sure of his footing, started forward again. His gait was stronger. He wasn't going to fall. Ragged now, battered, slower, but desperate to fight because that was all they had left, Myrmidons and Crusaders headed for the bridge. Lancer kept hearing the sounds of combat, but they were always distant echoes, travelling through mazes of passageways to reach him. Whatever was happening, it was too far away for him to bring help. The bridge remained the goal. Parten moved forward to join him.
"Permission to ask a question, Colonel?"
"Go ahead, Sergeant."
"How long can we hold them at the bridge?"
"We'll seal the door. Even when they breach it, the entrance is narrower than this corridor. I've seen it. That will create a bottleneck for them, an edge for us. We don't have to defeat them here. Just hold them back long enough."
"For what?"
"For us to reach the moon."
He said it as if that would be the end of things. It will be, he thought. She nodded, believing in his optimism, or accepting their fate. They climbed the levels from the cargo decks up towards the bridge at the top of the superstructure. The echoes of battle became more distant. Maybe there was time, Lancer thought. Maybe they had pulled ahead of the orc boarding parties enough to establish something like a real defense. At the base of the plain metal staircase leading to the bridge, he could hear activity from above. Purposeful, but not violent. That gave him hope. He ran up the stairs, his breath tearing into his lungs with a knife. The stairs ended in a wide passage leading port and starboard, with the doors to the bridge straight ahead. There was blood on the deck. It seeped from the open doorway to the bridge. The orcs were already here. The battle was over. The orcs' debased slave race were hauling out the corpses of the crew and tossing them in piles lining the corridor walls. They glanced at Lancer. They snickered, then called out to their masters as they scampered back onto the bridge. Lancer moved forward. He couldn't feel his legs. He couldn't feel his arms either. His body was a collection of disjointed fragments, all acting independently, all moving forward with no purpose. His brain was numb. He was a servitor, completing a hopeless task because there was nothing else to do. His left arm raised his pistol. His fingers were clumsy. It was hard to fire. His right arm hung limp, dragging the point of his sword over the decking. Noises behind him now. Cries, wails, the thudding of boots. Was that the whine of Lazfire? Maybe. He didn't care. It didn't matter. It was so far away. An orc war boss emerged from the bridge, a giant that had to bend in half to fit under the doorway. The deck shook beneath its armored feet. It looked like a tank that had learned to walk. When Lancer shot it, its lips parted in a smile, showing fangs the length of his hand. Its eyes amused. When it backhanded him, shattering his skeleton and sending him flying back down the staircase, the gesture was casual, maybe even disappointed. Maybe even bored. The expanse of destiny pulled up, its nose tilted towards the orc cruiser riding above the cloud of the armada. The movement was emphatic and slow, a glacio with delusions of ramming. Narcissus was about to order Rallis to stay in its wake when he saw the orc fighters moving away, heading for other targets. The expanse was not attempting a suicidal attack, he realized. She was already lost. Her new masters were taking the ship out of formation to join with the cruiser. There was no shelter here now. The irony of worrying about shelter, given his ship's destination, passed through his mind for the length of time it took him to draw a breath.
Helmsman, he said to Rallis, no more hiding. Time to run. Full power.
There are other big ships, Kondos said.
They won't be hours long. Not at this rate.
Exactly. Look.
He always paid attention when Kondos made that request. Their shared gifts were the reason the militant fire had survived to see this day. He was the improviser. She saw the big picture. She took in the myriad variables of a situation, creating the map for Narcissus to navigate. So he focused on the big ships. The orc squadrons were thick around them, tearing them open and inserting boarding parties. Away from the giants, the smaller ships were falling prey. Many were boarded. The smallest were destroyed. But the ones closest to the mass conveyors and factory ships were being ignored as the orcs concentrated on the big prizes.
Port, Narcissus said. Down 30 degrees, the Europa Forge. Behind the engines?
Rallis asked, already making the course correction.
No, keep up the speed.
Beneath his feet, Narcissus could just detect the faint vibration in the deck as the militant fire powered up. She was ready to race for her life, for the lives of all aboard, and for the life of any hope of victory.
Skim by her, then the spreading word.
He pointed to the colony ship just beyond the Europa Forge.
Understand? I do. We have a fast ship, helmsman. Let's prove it to the orcs. They won't even see us.
That's the whole idea, said Kondos.
The militant fire streaked towards the Europa Forge.
Like a stone over water,
Narcissus urged, and Rallis took him at his word. He took the ship in at a low angle of approach, as if it might really land on the other vessel's refinery. He passed over the superstructure. The orcs were clustered on the flanks of the hull. For a moment, the run looked clear. But then another squadron appeared off to the prow, heading straight for the bridge. The fire was flying level with them.
Down!
Narcissus yelled. A few decades earlier, Rallis would have questioned such a reckless order. Once, in the early days of the helmsman's service, Narcissus had forced him at gunpoint to perform a maneuver that Rallis had maintained would tear the ship apart. It hadn't, and they had escaped faster, more agile raiders. Rallis no longer questioned him. He plunged into the insane as if he were piloting a fighter, not a cargo ship. Rallis dropped the nose. The militant fire arrowed at the refinery. A collision could take out a large part of the fleet if the smaller ship punched through the plasma containment tanks. The surface of the reservoirs came closer. The fire was below the height of the chimney vents. They rose like a steel forest on either side. Narcissus felt the vertigo of rushing disaster, but he said nothing. He sensed Rallis's need to pull up, but the helmsman maintained course. Another second, then another. The orcs passing overhead. Wait. Wait. The impact in two breaths. Now!
Level us!
One breath. The perspective of the oculus changed with tectonic lethargy. The second and last breath, the militant fire flew straight. The struts of the belly Auspex array snapped off as they brushed against the Europa Forge's reservoir. Ahead, the ship bulked upwards. The orcs were now behind.
Up!
Narcissus ordered, at the same moment Rallis altered the course again. They pulled away from the Europa Forge. Rallis held them in a close parallel flight with it until they passed over the bow. Then he angled towards the spreading word. Any form of order in the merchant's armada had collapsed. The fleet was a storm of ships, boiling with evasions and captures. Collisions killed more vessels than the orcs as panicked flights intersected. The militant fire flew through a dissipating fog of plasma. Fragments of wreckage tumbled by. As she closed with the spreading word, she encountered what Narcissus thought was another debris cloud. The remains were corpses. Thousands of crusaders, frozen in their last agony, sucked out of the open flanks of the colony ship. For every ship that destroyed another, and for every one that was boarded, there were two that kept running. The fleet was a confusion of movement, but it still closed with the Orc Moon. Some of its elements raced far ahead of the others. The distance between ships grew. The sense of a collective action disintegrated, but there were so many vessels that there was still a crowd, still a mass migration of humans towards the fortress. Closer yet, Narcissus had to guard against the temptation to gaze at the moon's Gorgon image and lose the thread of the moment-by-moment decisions needed to see the militant fire to its destination. He was sweating. He was frightened. His ship's path was crossed again and again by squadrons of brutal predators. On all sides, the heroes of the proletarian crusade were dying, killed on boarded ships, ejected into the void, or vaporized by collisions. But he was also exhilarated, because the fire was not alone in its race. There was more than terror, flight, and destruction visible in the oculus. There was also determination. There was strength. There were no more orc fighters emerging from the Star Fortress. For the first time, Narcissus dared imagine that their resources were not infinite. The strategy that Speaker Tull had conceived was working. The Imperium had turned the orcs' own tactics against them.
"We're going to do it,"
Narcissus said, turning hope into words.
"We're going to flood them with our numbers."
What he said was an incantation, an attempt at a great alchemy, hope into words, words into reality.
"Port, upper quadrant," Kondos said.
Narcissus looked.
"Are you serious?"
Kondos had indicated one of the orc cruisers. The militant fire was ahead of almost all the large ships now. Most of the Imperial vessels in its company were smaller than it was.
"Why not?" Kondos asked. "Aren't we trying to get close to the greenskins?"
Narcissus grinned.
"Yes, we are."
There were very few orc fighters near the cruiser. The big ship was doing little beyond being a massive escort, protecting the squadrons against non-existent Imperial fire.
"Helmsman, let's embrace the madness."
He imagined he could actually hear the blood drain from the faces of the bridge crew. He laughed. It was that or let terror close his throat altogether. Rallis muttered prayers under his breath, but turned the fire's nose towards the orc monster. They closed the distance quickly. They shot past a handful of orc fighters, which ignored them. Narcissus wondered what the greenskins thought when they saw his ship's trajectory. Could orcs be stunned by the lunacy of an adversary? It pleased him to think so. The thought that the orcs just ignored the ship pleased him less, because behind it lurked the question of why they would not care. The militant fire flew beneath the cruiser's hull. Narcissus had a sense of metal dense as muscle, large as a city. The cruiser was a hellish god that could annihilate his ship with as little notice as he would swat an insect. His shoulders hunched as if the image alone of the orc vessel could crush him. But then they left it behind, too. And now there was only the moon. The dark divinity of the cruiser faded to nothing. The star fortress filled the oculus. Narcissus confronted an entire world built for war. The monstrosity became all that was real, and it was a reality that was shaped to enact a greater monster's will. It was a reality that traveled. There was too much impossible in his vision, too much horror. In defense of his sanity, he narrowed his focus to the geography, to the purpose of landing his ship where there was no spaceport. He concentrated on what he knew would be the last act of his career. Tunnel vision. He saw mountains, and he tuned out their constructed nature. He looked for a plane. He clutched the dream of victory. It held reality at bay. Fueled by the dream, followed by hundreds more dreaming vessels, the militant fire brought Joskina Tull's vision to the orcs.